You know, of all places in the world, what I'm telling you right now, especially in the beginning right now, you know that God made humanity. He gave them, you know, to work for 6 days, and on the seventh day they were to rest. But on that day we see that Jesus did many of his wonderful miracles on the Sabbath day, his healing miracles. And the Sabbath is a day of healing, but it is also a day to learn about healing. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that. And the Bible says in Deuteronomy chapter 6, 24, and the Lord commanded us to do all of his statutes. That means God commanded us to do all of his laws. And then the question is, why? Well, it says he also commands us to fear the Lord our God for our good what? Always. All of God's commandments are for what? Our good always, that he might preserve us alive as it is this day. Meaning, his commandments are for our good and they preserve life. There's a longevity benefit to God's commandments. And Counsels on Health says, let it ever be kept before the mind that the great object of health reform is to secure the highest possible development of mind and soul and body. So that's the key reason for the health message, to give the highest development of our mind, our soul, and our body. The body is important to God. But then what will be the result of that? All the laws of nature, which are the laws of God, are designed for our good. That's what we just saw in Deuteronomy 6, 24. Obedience to them will promote our what? Happiness. If we follow God's commands, his laws, his health laws, they will make us happy people. That's one of the reasons that God gave us the health message. Obedience to them will promote our happiness. You might think, well, in heaven, yes, but in this life, and will aid us in a preparation for the life to come. We don't get to go to heaven because we eat right. Yes or no? You don't get to go to heaven because you eat right, but by living out the health message, it will make you happier, and it will make it easier to go to heaven, because when we're happier people, it's easier to look up to God. Because for 10 years, I went through depression. I was in ministry. I was traveling the world, making documentary films, and I was going through depression. And in the midst of that, in the midst of the depression, it was very, very difficult. I read my Bible every day. I sought Jesus every day. I tried to make my heart right with God. But in the midst of all that depression, every time I would read the Bible, and I would read it every single day, but it felt like it was just condemning me every single time I read it. It's hard to press forward in your spiritual life when you feel guilty all the time. But that's how I felt. But I kept pressing forward because I knew Jesus was the answer. I preached righteousness by faith. Yet myself felt completely lost. And I'll tell you what a blessing. And what I'm going to share with you today is some of the things that helped me to overcome the depression that you may not have heard before. Some different angle than maybe you've ever heard, because I was following what I thought was the right things from the spirit of prophecy, because I was following the traditions that we had, that we have set up together. And then finally, after actually looking at what we were told in these great books, it actually changed my perspective on the health message, and it changed my life. So I'm going to share with you some of those things. The Bible says in Proverbs 29, verse 18. So Proverbs 29, verse 18 says, where there is no vision, the people perish. And some of the new translations say, where there is no prophetic vision. And this is the context of it, right? Where there is no prophetic vision, and specifically for us, it could be not that there hasn't been a vision, not that we haven't been blessed with a message, but what if we don't pay attention to it? Or we begin to make the traditions of what the articles in the aisle in the grocery store, what they say about health. What if that becomes the tradition that we put upon, and we try to interpret the Bible, and we try to interpret the messages we've been given 100 years ago, 100 plus years ago, in the light of what is in the grocery store or whatever, instead of saying, well, what does the message actually say? What does that actually say? And so, but what happens where there is no vision, when we don't follow it, the people perish. But then notice what it says. But he that keeps the law, what happens to him? He's happy. Notice those who follow God's law, it is not, we don't get to go to heaven because we keep it. We get to go to heaven because Jesus died for our sins. We are righteous by faith. So we receive righteousness from Jesus,
But then as we follow him, if we love him, we would want to do what? Keep his commandments. Not to be saved, but because we have been saved, right? So notice, he that keeps the law, not burdened is he, but happy is he, right? 1 Timothy 6:20 says, O Timothy, keep that which is committed to your trust, avoiding profane and vain babblings and oppositions of science. What? Falsely so-called. There are things that are not true science that people claim are science, but yet Paul refers to them as science falsely so-called. And he says, don't get caught up in falsely so-called science. Now, here's the thing. We know certain things. This is more of a health talk than just a standard sermon. But thinking back on history, we look back and we say, well, we understand a lot of the medications that were used in 100 plus years ago. Like, what were some of the things, like strychnine? Does that sound like a good medication? No. What about mercury? Yeah, that wasn't, it was called calomel back then. That doesn't sound very wise. We say, well, things have changed now. And so maybe now, and so we finally, as an institution, many of our institutions, I don't mean here necessarily, but I mean like large hospitals, have finally decided that that was yesteryear. Now all medication is pretty much good to go, right? And so looking back on what we were told the health retreat, they had a health retreat, was established at a great cost to treat the sick without drugs, and it should be conducted on hygienic principles. Drug medication should be worked away from as fast as possible until what? Entirely discarded. Now I get that in a very acute situation, somebody's brought into the hospital and there are some extenuating circumstances, but ultimately we were supposed to at some point get to the point where we could do that, evidently. And but someone might say, but Chad, you know, now drugs are safe. That was back then when they used crazy drugs. Now we use scientific drugs. This is taken from Harvard University. The title of this article is New Prescription Drugs, a Major Health Risk with Few Offsetting Advantages. So we have new drugs with few advantages. Notice what the article says in the blue. About 128,000 people die from drugs prescribed to them. This makes prescription drugs a major health risk, ranking fourth with stroke as the leading cause of death. It used to be 100 years ago that drugs used to be dangerous. But now they're not dangerous anymore, right? Or are they? I actually think it's much higher than the fourth leading cause of death, and I could show you information on that. But if we just left it at the fourth, that's significant, right? That is very significant. That evidently many of the drugs are still very dangerous. I could go on for an hour on research on that, but I'm not gonna do that today. But we are told there are many ways of practicing the healing art, but there is only one way that heaven approves. God's remedies are the simple agencies of nature that will not tax or debilitate the system through their powerful properties. I shared with the students some research that they found that for every round of antibiotics you take, it increases your chances of depression by 25%. And every 2 to 5 rounds of antibiotics increase your chances of depression by 50%. I took antibiotics and I went into year-round depression, oppressive depression. Didn't know why at the time. Later on, found out the research. And I don't have time to explain with you the physiology on that. I'd happily do it. But here's the thing. God has methods that are to heal but not give side effects. You follow? You know, Jesus, when he healed, his patients didn't walk away with debilitating problems because of the healing. You follow? So yes, antibiotics can do a great work, but research shows they increase rates of cancer, Alzheimer's, rheumatoid arthritis, depression, and I could show you the studies on and on, massive, massive studies that reveal this. Now, I'm not telling you you shouldn't take this. You get to choose whatever you want to do. God has given you your body, and it's the temple of the Holy Spirit, and you get to make your own decision. So I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just telling you something that typically won't be told when you take a drug, that there are many massive side effects. And we're told that God's remedies are not to tax and debilitate the system and bring on disease later on in life. But here's the thing. What if research comes out that tells us that some of the things we were told were not good are actually good for us? Do we throw out what we were given before? Do we say, well, maybe we were wrong and start doing it? And we have medical professionals amongst us who now do that. I'll give you an example. Can daily coffee use increase your lifespan? Here's the latest research. And it says, kind of researchers right up a little above, researchers found that those who drank between 1.5 to 3.5 cups of coffee per day were 16 to 21% less likely to die from all-cause, cancer-related, and cardiovascular disease-related mortality during the study period than non-coffee drinkers. So one of the things you should begin to prescribe your patients here should be coffee. What if it actually does? What if it lengthens life? Are we wrong? Do we give up what we believe because a new study came out? Now, actually, I didn't even ask. I should ask this. And if the audio doesn't work, that's okay. Or I could stick this mic by. Will the HDMI cause, will it actually give sound or no? Okay, let me see. Okay. Okay, let me see. What I'll do is... Oh, right here.
On World News, but the powerful effects of coffee and the growing body of research telling us in the right amounts, it can help us focus better and even fend off some disease later in life. But we asked tonight, what is it really doing to our brains? ABC's Lisa Stark with her own MRIs before and after.
It's the most popular drug in the world. I need that little boost. It's everywhere, from 320 milligrams in a Starbucks Cafe Grande, about the max you should have in a day, to energy drinks, to sodas, now even inhalable, 100 milligrams in an instant. But could that daily dose of caffeine be changing your brain? We turned to researchers at Wake Forest in North Carolina, where I underwent two MRI brain scans. This first scan with no caffeine in my system. Then I downed just one drink. Now my second MRI. This was my brain before caffeine. This was after. The difference was remarkable.
It's like a 40% drop in the blood flow to your brain. So that's a lot.
So before caffeine, with caffeine, the blood flow to my brain dropped
about
40%.
40%.
Really?
Yes.
Why the drop? Caffeine blocks a chemical called adenosine, which controls blood flow to the brain. Add caffeine, blood vessels constrict, less blood circulates in the brain, and your blood pressure and heart rate go up. So if you skip your regular coffee, that surging blood can trigger a caffeine headache.
It's like trying to get a fire hose to pump blood up through your skull.
If you're a caffeine lover, your brain has actually changed. It now functions normally on caffeine. How much caffeine do I have to drink to change the physiology of my brain?
Not very much.
Not very much?
No.
Like even a cup a day?
One cup a day will change your brain.
Now, one cup a day, what will it do? One cup a day will change your brain. It drops the blood flow to the brain by upwards of 40%. We are told in the wonderful writings we've been given that perfect health depends upon perfect what? Do you have perfect circulation with a 40% drop of blood flow to your brain? No, right? Now, okay, but let's say, but what if it actually increases longevity? What if it's true? Do we give up what we believe? Here's the thing. What if something increased longevity but had some other side effect that was a negative side effect? Let's see. Look at this research here. This is new research. Researchers from the University of South Florida conducted four different studies to see the impact on caffeine and behavior. They had people, upon entering a store, have a free complimentary caffeinated drink, a decaf drink, or water. Those who drank the caffeinated drink spent 50% more money while in the store. Another study showed that online shoppers were also more prone to impulse purchases while on caffeine, and they state that caffeine makes people more impulsive and lowers what? Self-control. Now, it's interesting, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faith, gentleness, and what? Self-control, or temperance in the King James Version. But notice that caffeine drinking lowers one of the fruits of the Spirit. So what if you could live longer with less of the fruit of the Spirit? Would that be a benefit overall to your life according to the biblical understanding. Here's the thing. If we become what standard scientists are, they are reductionists. And what that means is, if you can find something good in something, it is good. So, for instance, if you take this pill that I have, this drug that I have for you, and it may be good for your skin, it may increase rates of suicide, or later on, you know, maybe bleeding in the stomach, or various things, but it can be good for your skin. And so, standard medical science would say that is good. Good and bad, positive and negative equal positive in medical science. But from a biblical and a spirit of prophecy standpoint, good plus bad equals a negative. Do you follow? So if it has negative side effects, especially spiritually negative side effects, these are things that we should not promote, even if there were some physiological benefits. Do you follow? So let us continue to go forward. We are told, abstain from fleshly lusts. If God knew that caffeine would negatively impact your character, maybe He should have just told us. He did. Check this out. Abstain from fleshly lusts, which war against the soul. This is a quote from 1 Peter 2:11. Is the language of the Apostle Peter. Many regard this warning as applicable only to the licentious, those who have license to do immorality. But it has a broader meaning. It guards against every injurious gratification of appetite or passion. It is a most forcible warning against the use of such stimulants as narcotics as tea, coffee, tobacco, alcohol, and morphine. These indulgences may well be classed among the lusts that exert a pernicious influence upon what? Moral character. God isn't simply interested in longevity, although that is important. But there are other ways to have longevity without negatively impacting the fruit of the Spirit. You follow? We want good with good, not the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. We want the tree of life, right? So now I'm going to share with you something. Now, this is something that, okay, we get this. All right. So even if, and some of our, at least one of our doctors came out and said, well, we should actually prescribe this to patients, caffeine, coffee, because we see the great benefits of it. But once again, let's not throw out the wonderful messages because there's some benefit to some substance that we were told was not healthy, right? Now I'm going to turn to something that may be new to you that has changed my life and helped me get over depression, OCD, obsessive compulsive thinking, and has actually changed my wife and my marriage. This is going to be new to some of you, but hear me out before you stone me. No, you can disagree with me. I will love you no matter what. By the way, one thing I share with people is I can sit down across from my father, and he can eat his octopus, or he can eat an alligator, or he can eat his whatever, and I can eat my sweet potato, and we can enjoy each other's company. We should not judge each other, put each other down. And if you choose to eat the way the things that I'm going to talk about right now, I will love you anyway. I will love you anyway. But if you get mad at me, it might be because you're eating what we're going to talk about next. And you'll see. And we'll look at the research. And I say this, you know, kind of facetiously, but I will love you no matter what, even after you actually become angry with me. But I don't think you will. And so let's look at now this is going to be different. You may not have heard this before. I want to look at research on this is the actual name of the study, the potential relationship between spicy taste and risk seeking. I'm going to share with you some research that shows that spicy food could be impacting your character. Your character. I love spicy food, by the way. It's one of my favorite things on planet Earth. Like I said, I grew up, my very favorite food was pork growing up. And I used to, at 11 o'clock at night, every single night, I would eat an entire box of macaroni and cheese, and I would put on every single, one at a time, eat every spoonful, Tabasco sauce. So, you know, macaroni and cheese, and before it made it to my mouth, Tabasco sauce on every single bite. I love spicy food, by the way. I absolutely love it. I came from a family that loves spicy food. If you went to my house right now, almost every single food in the house is spicy. So you might think, well, what does this guy know about spicy food? I know a lot about it. I used to, you know, if you've had something like habanero pepper, I didn't know about the ghost pepper back then. We just never heard of it. But a habanero pepper makes a jalapeno seem like a carrot, right? I mean, they're so amazingly hot. I love spicy foods. I'm not putting anybody down. At my wedding, we had Thai food because we love spicy food. But I want to share with you the research. It changed my life. There's three different studies here, but the final one is study three employed an experimental design to manipulate risk-seeking tendencies by having participants experience spicy food taste in the lab. Feeding people spicy food, momentarily savoring spicy foods, increased participants' risk-taking in the Iowa gambling task. The present findings suggest that preference for spicy taste could correlate with risk-seeking tendencies and subsequent risk-seeking behaviors. So the only thing I'm proving by this, trying to prove by this study, is that spice can change your character. And in general, should we be seeking to do more risky things in life? You might think, well, maybe that'll make me risk my life for Jesus, right? Well, that sounds good. But generally, is that what happens? No, it makes people more prone to maybe sleeping around or smoking or drinking or doing things that are not good. They're risky, right? But we're not done here. This is just the first study. We're going to have kind of several studies here. This is from a scientific journal called the Journal of Experimental Social Psychology. The title of this is You Are What You Eat, an empirical investigation of the relationship between spicy food and aggressive cognition. What did they find in this study? They found that people who consume more spicy food have more of what is called trait aggression. Spicy food evidently may make people more spicy. It makes them more aggressive, right? Why do we even use those terms, right? Now, anybody know who this chap is right here? Yes, Mao Zedong, right? This man, he looks like a friendly chap, got kind of a little smirk on his face, but he was one of the two greatest mass murderers in human history. And he was obviously Chairman Mao of China, brought communism into China, murdered, you know, countless millions of people. It's unreal. He made Hitler look like the JV team. But Mao, this is an anecdotal story, historical story that I want to share with you before we go forward. So Mao had a man, you know, East Germany was separated from Germany and kind of became the communist side of Germany. And there was a liaison in East Germany named Otto Braun, who had to go work with Mao in China, and so he would go spend time with him. And this testimony is from Otto. Now, are Germans known historically for being into spicy food? No, right? Notice what this is not Mao speaking, this is Otto Braun. Otto Braun said, for example, For a long time I could not accustom myself to the strongly spiced food, such as hot fried peppers, which is traditional in southern China, especially in Hunan, Mao's birthplace. Mao said to Otto Braun, the food of the true revolutionary is the red pepper. He also said, and he who cannot endure red peppers is also unable to fight. Now you say, Chad, that's an anecdotal story. That doesn't prove that it's true. No, we looked at the evidence in the research to back that up. But this is something that humans have noticed throughout history, that spicy food could make people more spicy, more likely to fight, and in this case, be revolutionaries, right? Now, we're not done. Here's a scientific journal called Psychoneuroendocrinology. And the title of this study is Marital Distress, Depression, and a Leaky Gut. Have you heard of leaky gut before? Leaky gut, and then it goes on to say translocation of bacterial endotoxin as a pathway to inflammation. And basically, just to give you a quick little simplistic illustration, the intestines are basically a tube. And that tube is lined with a very simple, a layer called the epithelial layer. And between that and your feces, between the epithelial layer and your feces, is a layer of a carbohydrate mixture of mucus. And what the intestines are supposed to do is stop the feces from just getting into your bloodstream. Nobody would want feces like traveling through their bloodstream. But there are certain things like toxins that can open up the lining of the intestines and cause bacteria and endotoxins to make it into the bloodstream and cause inflammation. And this opening up of the junctions in the intestines, we call it leaky gut. In the research, they call it increased intestinal permeability. And what did they find in this study? They found in the journal Psychoneuroendocrinology, researchers found increased intestinal permeability in couples who had more hostile marital arguments. So couples who were arguing a lot had these openings in the junctions of the gut, making toxins more likely to go into the bloodstream, creating inflammation in their bodies. They've done research and they've found something called IED, or intermittent explosive disorder. You can kind of just from the name of it guess what it means. People who have intermittent explosive episodes where they're going along, the day's going perfectly fine, and then boom, they fly off the handle and you're like, whoa, where'd that come from? That's called intermittent explosive disorder. And they have found that people who have IED, intermittent explosive disorder, have higher rates of inflammation. Interesting. Now, this study shows that couples who disagree more, that they fight more, they argue more, have higher levels of intestinal permeability, openings in the junctions of their intestines. Now, I'm going to ask a question. Are there certain foods? Now, to give you an illustration of the most common, not the most common, it's 1% of people. 1% of people have celiac disease, where they have an autoimmune response to gluten. And if they eat gluten, the junctions of the intestines open up and they have terrible diarrhea and inflammation within the gut and within their body. That's an example of what it is. Now, around 6% of people are either 1% are have celiac and about 5% are somehow have a struggle with gluten or something else in wheat. And so about 6% of people should avoid it, but about 94% of people do perfectly fine with wheat and gluten. But there is a small percentage of people, and if you're one of the people that has that, then you would just simply avoid it. But for the rest of the people, they do typically fine. But are there certain other foods that can increase intestinal permeability in normal people? Here's research on intestinal permeability and certain spices. This is going to be surprising. In the Journal of Nutrition, researchers looked at the effect that certain spices had on intestinal permeability, and it revealed that certain spices, including cayenne, paprika, and chili, can increase intestinal permeability. Fascinating. Now, someone might be thinking, but Chad, aren't there benefits to it? And I wouldn't doubt it. You know why I wouldn't doubt it? Because spices have some of the highest rates of, what do we call them? Yeah, antioxidants of almost any food. They have some of the highest rates of antioxidants of any food. So would there be benefits to spicy food? The answer is yes. But would there be side effects to them also? The answer is yes. It may impact your character negatively. So the question is, are there other ways to open up the arteries, to dilate the blood vessels other than spices? The answer is absolutely yes. God's given us all kinds of foods that don't have the negative side effect that we can use to reverse heart disease. We already know you can reverse heart disease in many people. We can arrest it in most everybody, stop it in its tracks, and in many people actually reverse heart disease. So we don't necessarily need something with a side effect to help us out. We can go right to something that is purely good without the side effects, right? Now, once again, even if you disagree, I will love you anyway. I'm not here to fight about it. I know that this is taught almost everywhere. Almost everywhere these things are taught to be good. And they do have benefits. I agree. But what if it's impacting people's levels of lust and anger and OCD thinking and depression and fighting in their marriage? Would it be worth it? Now, we're not done, there's more. Now, but if God knew this, why didn't he just tell us about this? He did. Listen to this. This is, if this quote alone was given from the Spirit of Prophecy, this would be evidence enough that there is a God to me. Listen to what she said over 100 years ago. She never could have known this. Spices at first irritate the tender coating of the stomach. The epithelial layer? How did she know about the leaky gut, the inflammation of the intestines? How did she know these things? But finally, destroy the natural sensitiveness of this delicate membrane. It was specifically the membrane that was being troubled, she said, way before any researcher knew this to be true. well over 100 years, nobody knew about this. This sounded crazy. Then, notice what it goes on to say. This is unreal. The blood becomes what? Fevered. What's another word? What would be a modern word for fevered? It would be inflamed. Oh, that's what the research shows. The blood becomes fevered. Then what happens? The animal propensities are aroused. Animal propensities could be anger, it could be lust, it could be various things. And what happens? While the moral and intellectual powers are weakened and become servants to the baser passions. Fascinating. How did she know the physiology of this over 100 years ago? That right now it is cutting-edge science what she was saying. How did she know that? It can only be that God gave it to her. How could it be? Now here, I want to stop right here. Actually, I'll give you a testimony, then we'll come back to what the Spirit of Prophecy says, and then we'll look at more science. So, my wife and I, we're not proud to tell this story, but it's true that I came from a background of family arguing very, very regularly. But yelling and just anger in the house. There was no like hitting or it wasn't physical abuse, but there was yelling. It was a common part of life, getting angry all the time. I was one of the most angry human beings I've ever met in my entire life. If you ask my friends, you ask Scott Ritzema. He and I grew up together before we were Seventh-day Adventists. Neither of us were Adventists. Scott and I was one of the most angry human beings I've ever seen. I just fly off the handle all the time. And then I became an Adventist and gave my life to Jesus, and I was reading my Bible every day. And there's a friend of mine says this, if you think you're a good person, I kind of thought I was a good person. He said, if you think you're a good person, get married. I got married. And then, I'm ashamed to say this, but Fadi and I, we actually really enjoyed each other's company. We were best friends, but we would argue every single day. And we're having devotions every single day. And we're asking Jesus every single day to help us stop doing that. But we're arguing every single day, and we knew the Bible said you should not let the sun go down on your wrath, so we would apologize every single day. But we didn't want to argue all the time. We didn't want to. We were sick of that. And we're seeking Jesus every single day. I mean, every day. And this goes on for years, honestly. I'm ashamed to say it. You think, oh, you guys didn't like each other. No, we did. We were still friends. We actually liked each other. We enjoyed talking to each other, but the smallest things would just set us over the edge and we would just argue. This happened all the time. And then after years of marriage, I knew, many of us know these quotes, but we don't really think they're true. We kind of think they do because they must be true, but we don't know how they could be true because we don't see it. Right? And so, because the days I'd eat spicy food, I'd argue with my wife. The days I didn't eat spicy food, I'd argue with my wife, right? I didn't see any difference. Then, we decided, let's see what happens if we go an entire month without any spices, because we didn't know what she was talking about. So we're like, let's just see what happens. Let's just do a test. Now, this is anecdotal, but we've been able to share this around the world and hear the results of people around the world implementing this and seeing it change their lives. So what happened was, we stopped eating spices, and you know what happened the next day? We argued just as much as the day before. And the next day, and the next day, and probably the next day. You might be thinking, Chad, this isn't working with what you seem to be trying to feed us, right? But somewhere about a week to 2 weeks in, we started to calm down. We started to become patient. And what formerly would make us set off the edge or get angry or say something mean to the other one or get frustrated, now we would literally just chuckle at it. We just kind of laughed. This was totally different. And so we're like, man, our marriage started getting better and better and better. And we're like, this is phenomenal. So we stuck with it for a month. But if your marriage is better than ever, would you want to just go back to it? No. So we stuck to it another month. And I love spicy food, but my marriage was going so well. So we stuck with it for 2 months. And then we were asked by some folks that we were trying to witness to. They were Indians. And they wanted to go to an Indian restaurant. And by the way, I've been to India multiple times. I love Indian food. I love Thai food. I like any kind of spicy food you can give to me. It doesn't matter what. I love spicy food. And so they invite us out. We wanted to witness to them. And we thought, hey, we're going to go do whatever they asked us to do. And we went. And it was super, super spicy. It was probably like from Andhra. Andhra is the hottest region of India. And by the way, I loved it. It was a phenomenal meal, actually. But you know what happened later that night? Surprisingly enough, nothing. We were just as friendly as the day before. So once again, you might be thinking, Chad, this isn't working well, your little illustrations here. But the next day, I spoke, sadly, totally rudely to Fadia. And then somebody, we were staying with someone because we were speaking somewhere, and somebody unplugged the Instant Pot that Fadia was cooking food in. Not me, it was somebody at the house there we were visiting. And nobody was around, but she didn't know at what point it turned off, so she didn't know how long to put it back in for. And she started getting frustrated, like, what were they thinking? And she got really angry inside, so angry, and she couldn't even rationalize it. She's like, God, why am I getting so angry? This is crazy. It's like I can't control my emotions. And then she actually started crying there. She's like, Lord, this is crazy. I'm getting ready for church. Obviously, I was rude to her on Sabbath morning. How shameful. And then later that day, I spoke a second time rudely to her, and then she told me why this anger she had. But when I spoke the second time to her, she said, why are you doing this? And I said, I thought, yeah, this is weird. Why am I doing this? And then I thought about it. I said, you know what we ate yesterday, don't you? And she said, no. I said, yeah, I think so. Now, that's one anecdotal story. We have tried this over and over and over and over and over with near 100% correlation in our lives. And here's the thing. So recognizing this, we have seen this. We've seen it from the research. We've seen it in our own lives. But we've met like 5 families in the last 20 years that have never argued their entire marriage. And I know some people hear that, and I've had people sit in the crowd go, ha, that's because one of them's a pushover. And they don't argue because that person just accepts whatever the other one says, right? It's actually not true, though, because 2 of the families that I can think of off the top of my head are successful business families, like very successful families. And I could even tell one of them, and you probably know who they are. And they just told, this woman actually told me, she stood in front of my wife, she said, one of our workers came to us, and she's like, yeah, I'm struggling with my boyfriend and anger problems and all this. And she told him, my husband and I, we never argue. She said, if you married a Christian, you would never have arguments in your marriage either. And we were like, but actually we're like, okay. Yeah, like, oh yeah, that's true, right? Right? You never argue if you're a Christian, right? And we're like, oh man, we're like heathen over here. But I realize that she thinks that's normal, right? And you might be one of those people that you've never argued in your marriage, you've never struggled with lust problems, you've never struggled with depression or OCD or negative repetitive thoughts. You may have never struggled with that. And if you have, praise God for you. But that's not me. I'm kind of a crazy person without Jesus and without the health message. So you may say, well, Chad, it doesn't seem to do that to me. It may not make you angry. It might make you crazy lustful. What does it say? You can become a servant to the baser passions. And I don't say this to put anybody down, but cultures that are known for eating very spicy food are often slaves to baser passions. This is not insulting races because it's not racial. One race can have a spicy group in that race and they become servants to the baser passions, and others who don't eat the spicy food are way less prone to it. You can just see it culturally. But you may say, well, Chad, it doesn't seem to affect me, so I can eat it with my wife and we can feed it to our children. Let's just say you don't notice any impact. You don't struggle with lust, anger, these kind of things. Depression, anxiety. You don't struggle with that. Let's say you feed it to your kids. What might we be told could happen to them in the inspired writings? A similar condition is produced under the irritating influence of fiery spices. With the stomach in such a state, there is a craving for something more to meet the demands of appetite. Something stronger and still stronger. Next, you'll find your sons out on the street learning to what? Come on. Come on. She's saying there's a correlation between spicy food and addictive substances? Come on, that sounds like a stretch. Yet it says, it's a grievous lesson, it makes them deathly sick, yet they press the matter through with a perseverance that would be praiseworthy in a better cause. Tobacco weakens the brain and paralyzes its fine sensibilities. Its use excites a thirst for strong drink, and in very many cases lays the foundation for the liquor habit. She says spicy food makes people more likely to become smokers and then more likely to become what? Drinkers. You say, Chad, that sounds like a stretch. This is exactly my testimony, by the way. Growing up super spicy food, becoming a smoker, becoming a heavy drinker, and doing drugs. Now, you say, but Chad, that sounds like a stretch. They haven't done like research and actually found out that's true, have they? Check this out. spices and alcohol addiction. In the journal Psychiatry Investigation, researchers looked at people's preference for spicy food and also their genetics. In the conclusion of the study, they state a strong preference for spicy food can be assumed to be a risk factor for alcohol dependence. How did she know that? How could she have told us that, a person with a third grade education? How could she have known that? Well, you say, Chad, but you missed. There was one part you didn't tell us. What about smoking? Another study. In the British Medical Journal of nearly 500,000 people, yes, study there, it was found that those who ate more spicy food smoked more tobacco and drank more alcohol. Was she right? Wow. But Chad, what if there's benefits to it? Then it would be okay, right? There are benefits to it. And here's the thing, too. Let's say, because I hear people say, well, when someone's given a heart attack, maybe they can stick some cayenne in their mouth. Okay. Probably if someone's dying, you're not as worried if they're going to be a little cranky tomorrow, right? You're probably not as worried about that. Maybe in a medicinal situation you use something, but do you use something medicinally every single day of the week? No, that's a medicine. So if you're going to use it for that, you don't make it a normal part of life. By the way, the research did not show that you could reverse heart disease if you used cayenne. It's just being on a whole non-refined plant-based diet. Non-refined, not just sugar, but anything refined, right? This is what the research has shown. So you don't need that to actually do that. There's things you can do without it, right? And so if you choose to use that, that's, you know, I'm not here to judge anybody, but could we be negatively affecting the character? Could we? I'll tell you what. I'll give you one more anecdotal story. I knew the research, and I knew what the Spirit of Prophecy said. And I went to visit one of the countries of the world that's considered to be one of the spiciest places on planet Earth. And when I got there, I figured there would be massive levels of rape and child sexual abuse. But when I got there, I mean, I couldn't see it. You don't see it in the open. But I was speaking next to one of the largest medical institutions in the world, where they have 10,000 patients a day. It's the second largest hospital in the world. And most of the people coming to our meetings were connected to the hospital there. And one of the pediatricians came up to me. I was speaking on the gut-brain connection. And one of the pediatricians came up afterward, and he said, I work with children day in, day out. He said, the official government statistics in this country for child sexual abuse are that 50% of children are sexually abused. He said, but I work with them, and I believe the number is actually closer in our country to 80 to 95% of children. Then I went and talked to a friend. I said, do you know, because I knew about a lot of women were raped, and I went and asked a friend who had worked there. He was from the States, and I said, do you know about how many women are raped in this particular country? And he said, yes. He said, my wife asked one of our workers there, is it true that so many women are raped in this country? And the woman's response was, I don't know a woman who has not been raped. Fascinating that we are told that eating this way all the time makes us servants to the baser passions. It may have its benefits, but we're not looking for the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. We are looking for the tree of life, right? So I'm not judgment. Now, day of fire, I'm not going to go through all the research. I could read it all. But intestinal permeability and recent suicidal behavior. People who have increased intestinal permeability or leaky gut, research has shown, have higher levels of suicidal tendencies and, you know, actually trying to commit suicide. But I can tell you this, it can take a week or more for it to settle down. Just like we said, the reason people don't make the correlation in their own life, because if I eat it today, tomorrow I might be frustrated, but I may not eat it that day, and even for the next couple days it may not go away, so I don't see the correlation. So it takes a while for the gut to settle down. And you may see that your levels of depression, anxiety, OCD, now your health might be quite good seemingly, but the psychological problems may be detrimental. Yes. Yeah, I also had social anxiety. I used to, while I ate this way, I would travel, I would speak, I would connect with people all day long, but it stressed me out so much to spend time with people. People wouldn't notice it because I seemed like I was like a social person. But by the end of the day, I was just like, man, I just want to get away from this. I wanted to get away all the time. And then I quit the spicy food, and for the first time in my life, I didn't feel like an addict anymore. And I didn't also have social anxiety. Now I can spend time with people all day long, from morning till evening, and never get tired of it. My depression went away. My anxiety went away. My OCD, repetitive, guilty, negative thoughts, gone. Gone. This is one of the greatest experiences. And now, I can actually have a happy marriage when I don't do these things. But when we end up stumbling on it and we have to go eat spicy food somewhere with somebody else or whatever, we're like, oh man, Lord, help us to help us pray more now, because we know we're going to struggle for the next several days, right? We know it. But listen to this. Let's go back to this. She told us food prepared with condiments and spices inflame the stomach, corrupts the blood, and paves the way for stronger stimulants. That's what the research shows. Induces nervous debility. It was making me nervous, stressed around people all the time. How did she know? Impatient. We were getting angry at each other all the time. And lack of self-control. Why should we not drink the coffee? It'll lengthen your life. Because it might negatively impact your self-control, the fruit of the Spirit. This may benefit you. It may benefit you, but it may negatively impact your spiritual life. Tobacco and wine cup follow. How did you? It just boggles my mind. But it's not only that. Spicy food is associated with higher rates of cancer. Imagine, we may be making people more likely to have cancer feeding them these foods. Many times we may struggle with this. In eating spicy food may be making us more likely. This is not one study. This is a meta-analysis of 39 studies looked at spicy food and the risk of cancer. Researchers discovered that spicy food intake was associated with increased incidence of cancer. This is incredible. What if we had people eat the way we were called to? What might be the results? We go forward. Spicy food and sleep disruptions. That negatively impacts sleep. I'm not going to read it all. Spicy food and dementia. It increases rates, potentially, of dementia. I could go on and on with the scientific studies, but we don't have time. She tells us a plain diet, free from spices and flesh meats. Do you see how we can get caught up in traditions of society? And the reason I tell you this isn't because I'm holy or great or I'm a good guy. It's because I am like a crazy person without God's message. And when my depression went away, I wondered, why did it work? And I decided I wasn't going to go look to other teachers in the church. I wanted to know, what did God say? And so I began to read thousands of pages of Ellen White's writings on the health message. I wanted to know not what we say is healthy. I wanted to know what God said was healthy. And I began to think, wow, we kind of know these quotes, but we're like, maybe this kind is okay, right? Even though, once again, it's good, but it's bad. And we're not looking for both. We're looking for only the good. But she says a plain diet, free from spices and flesh meats and grease of all kinds. Keep that word, grease of all kinds. To keep those out of the diet would prove a blessing to you and would save your wife a great amount of suffering, grief, and despondence. Have you ever struggled with suffering, grief, and despondence? Or anger, or any of these things that we talked about. She says that spices can do that to you. She says that flesh meats can do that to you. And we already know that just going on a plant-based diet, even with spicy food, can lower your risk of depression by 50% maybe. But how much more if we actually went all the way doing what we were also told to do, right? You get to even lower your depression even more. And your thoughts, negative thoughts, even more. But she also says grease of all kinds. What is that? Now, typically when we think of grease, what do we think of? Normally. Animal grease, right? Fat from animals, grease. But what did the definition mean back in 1904? John Harvey Kellogg, when he was still in the faith, he tells us. He says, we often are asked the question, this is no judgment, people can do whatever they want, but I just want to share with you some things. We are often asked the question, are nut oils, olive oil, cottonseed oil, and similar fats derived from vegetable sources to be considered altogether wholesome? To this question, we must say no. The chief objection to the use of oil, lard, tallow, butter, and other forms of what? What did he consider grease? Animal substances, but also what? Also, even plant oils. Did you know, for instance, we were just in Romania a few weeks ago. Do you know what the word in Romanian for oil is? Grisa. Grisa. It's the Latin name for fat, right? For this fatty substance. Doesn't mean, plant, animal, whatever. And so what does he say? So Ellen White said all forms of greed should be avoided. Now, I want to say one thing. We're talking about the apex of health. I don't believe it's a sin to eat olive oil or various kinds of oil. But what does the research actually show? Was she right or was she off? This is a good question. This is from Circulation, which is the official journal of the American Heart Association, looking at, they have stated that coconut is a special substance that has the amazing ability to increase cholesterol more than almost anything else. What do you mean? Coconut oil can raise your cholesterol more than beef fat. And butter can raise it even higher. So butter actually is better at raising cholesterol than even coconut oil. And many people say, no, Chad, there's MCT oil in it, and that actually is a medium-chain triglyceride, and because it's a medium chain, it doesn't actually increase cholesterol. This is what is said. But when it's actually put to the test, they find this in different studies, the same thing repeatedly, that coconut oil increases cholesterol. Not as much as butter, but it does increase it. And many vegans today, I was one of them. I was a high-fat vegan for many years. And what did it do? I had high cholesterol also as a vegan. And many times we just think, well, it's just our genetics then. It was until I actually got the oil out of the diet. I don't think it's a sin to eat it, by the way. But even the American Heart Association, they are saying the same thing. They said you can use coconut oil. Now, here's the thing. You might say, Chad, but it's plant food. It is. But does God generally want us to have refined foods? Sugar, do people generally think sugar is a health food? No, because it's a refined food. Oil is the same thing in fat. It's just a refined fat. Is it a sin to eat it? No. We're not saying it's sin. But if you have patients who struggle with diabetes, it increases the rates people being more likely to have type 2 diabetes. Because it's a high fat that clogs the cells and makes people insulin resistant. Research actually shows that. What about coconut? This is from Universa Medicina, scientific journal. Frequent coconut milk increases the risk of vascular disease in adults. But many times people look at it and say, no, but there's good things in coconut oil. But it also has side effects. So now, if you say, but Chad, it's a plant. So if you're going to eat it, what might be the best way to eat it? Eat some coconut, right? Why not eat it the way God made it? But now, it's not technically a nut. We call it coconut. But it's like a nut in that it's high in what? Fat. What does Ellen White say about nuts? Eat nuts sparingly. Isn't that interesting? Eat nuts sparingly. They're good for you. But overconsumption, especially in any refined form, I want to show you. This is normal. This was taken by Roy Swank. It's kind of hard to see. This is normal blood flow before a meal. Notice how nicely you can actually see the blood cells moving through the capillaries. Harder to see in that shot. But then they have people, this is actually an animal-based study, but Dr. Michael Greger shows this, and he said it ends up even being, it does also happen in humans. This is what happens after eating a fatty meal. You end up having something called sludge blood. They actually call it sludge blood. After a fatty, look at that. It is unreal. They begin to just crush together like this. And fascinatingly, though this is an animal study, he goes on to talk about how also in humans, and you know what he said makes more sludge blood than animal fat? Plant-based fats. Have you ever had a high-fat meal and after the meal you are so tired? You're just so tired. You feel like you can hardly do anything, like you got to go take a nap. It is sludge blood. And perfect health is dependent upon perfect circulation. So I had gallbladder issues as a vegan. I was a high-fat vegan. And I had a doctor told me, Chad, you've got to cut oil out of your diet if you want to save your gallbladder. And I said, no way, that's crazy. Ellen White said, olive oil is good for you. And she said, show me the quote. I said, no problem. And here it is. When properly prepared what? Olives, like nuts, supply the place of butter and flesh meats. The oil as eaten, what? In the olive is preferable to oil or fat. Notice the oil as eaten, what? In the olive. I never noticed it. I saw the word oil. I saw the word olive. I figured this has to be refined food. Right? So could you still eat olive oil, the best place to get it is where? In the olive. Do I think it's a sin to eat olive oil? Not at all. You can choose to eat it. But if you want the apex of health, if you want to see the greatest return on your investment of changing people's lives, you can see turnarounds in people's cholesterol and their blood sugar levels within days of cutting this one thing out of the diet. It is unbelievably successful. It's unbelievable. It can make such a difference. There, like I said, I had high cholesterol until I did this one thing. And I had gallbladder pain every day. Within 3 days of cutting this out of my diet, no more gallbladder pain. So I stuck with it for 6 months, went back to it, and after a while, the gallbladder pain began to come back. So I'm not telling you what you have to do, but I'm telling you some of the research that is... I could go on research out this, but we don't have time. I've already gone way too long. But notice what she says. This is what she says to do in many cases of sickness. This is like the prescription, like powerful prescription for sickness. In many cases of sickness, the very best remedy is for the patient to fast for a meal or two. Not forever, just one time, skip a meal or two. So roughly a 24-hour fast that the overworked organs of digestion may have an opportunity to rest. Then what? A fruit diet for a few days has often brought great relief to brain workers. So after the fast, you go on a fruit diet for a few days. How many days is a few? Yeah, maybe 3, 4. I mean, it's hard to tell because it's not like a couple. We know couple is 2, right? A few is like, probably more than 2, but probably at least 3 or a couple more, but not much. It's not a solid number. A fruit diet for a few days has often brought great relief to brain workers. Many times a short period of entire abstinence from food, followed by simple, moderate eating, has led to recovery through nature's own recuperative effort. An abstemious or a simple diet for a month or two would convince many sufferers that the path of self-denial is the path to health. And I know that places like this is kind of what you do. You typically have like a fast in the beginning, and then we begin to add food back into the diet, right? It's pretty standard at our health centers, and we get it from like this quote, right? But it's interesting that she says to start them off on a fruit diet. Many people are afraid of fruit because fruit has something inside of it, and that is what? Sugar. And we're afraid that sugar will cause more things like cancer. Now, this is what I call reductionism. They look at something in it and then say that it's bad because there's sugar in it. But what happens when you actually look at the studies of when people actually eat it, not just what's in it, right? What happens? This is a study called the Void Ore Cohort. It was a 60-year follow-up of nearly 5,000 people, and they found that a 38% decrease in cancer risk for those who ate the highest intake of fruit. Far from fruit causing cancer, it is probably one of the best cancer fighters. But you might say, but Chad, what about dried fruit? What about cancer? What about diabetes? Here's the British Medical Journal, one of the most prestigious medical journals. This black line toward the top is either an increased risk of type 2 diabetes or decrease, depending on the food that you eat. On the very far left side, and there's the reference range, that black line up and down, a cantaloupe, for about 50% of people, gives them trouble with sugar problems. But for about the other half, it really doesn't bother them. But then you come on to strawberries. In general, strawberries lower your risk of type 2 diabetes. This is a study of over 100,000 people. Oranges lower it more. Peaches, plums, and apricots lower it more. And notice where the plums are. Grapefruit more, bananas more, apples and pears more, prunes. What's a prune? A dried plum. Is a dried plum potentially even better than a fresh one for diabetics or someone who might, to keep them from becoming diabetic? Yes. Grapes and raisins. Raisins are just as good as grapes when it comes to trying to avoid diabetes, and blueberries also. Now, here's the thing. Could it be that dried fruit's even good? I'm going to show you something just a moment. It's going to blow your mind. What about dehydrated fruit? Research reported in the March 2020 journal Advances in Nutrition revealed that traditional dried fruit consumption, dried fruit without added sugar and preservatives like sulfur, so non-preservative dried fruit, can lower certain risks of cancer or cancer mortality. These were specifically looking at dates, prunes, and raisins. What? The research revealed a 24% lowered risk of precancerous colorectal polyps, a 49% lower risk of prostate cancer, and 65% lower risk of mortality from pancreatic cancer. These are incredible numbers. The research showed that the overall dried fruit consumption seemed to be more protective against cancer than fresh fruit. How could this be? And if it's true, why didn't God just tell us? Guess what? Look what he said. Ministry of Healing. Whenever dried fruit, such as raisins, prunes, apples, pears, peaches, and apricots, are obtainable at moderate prices, it will be found that they can be used as what? Staple articles from Diane much more freely than is customary. With the best result. Not with okay results or it's okay or adequate. With the best results of the health and vigor of all classes of workers. All classes. This is like crazy. Who would believe this? This is craziness. But this is what the research showed. Nobody believes this today. I have never met a human that believed this. But the research shows it, and the spirit of prophecy showed it. And so if we just stuck to what we were told, we found out, wow, God is amazing. So you might be asking the question, well, then what is the best food? Is it sprouts? Is it kale? Is it spinach? What is it? What did God tell us? Fruit, if it can be obtained, is the best article of food. Many times we worry about the sugar, but you're not eating the sugar, you're eating the fruit. Did you know with the dates, they had diabetics eat 7 to 10 dates in a study to see if it would cause blood sugar issues. 7 to 10 dates. Is that quite a few dates at a meal? Yeah, it's quite a bit, right? It did not cause blood sugar issues in diabetics nor in non-diabetics. They said it actually may help people with blood sugar issues, even though it's 80% sugar in the date. But because it's in the lattice of fiber, it slowly releases that, giving energy in the perfect form that the Creator, just as it was from the Creator's hand. He's slowly giving you that. But you might say, but Chad, isn't fruit dangerous for the sick? Maybe not for sick, maybe for normal people, but if you're sick, you should watch out for that. Sick people, God told us, need a liberal supply of fruit. A word to the wise is sufficient. Let a special interest be taken in obtaining a supply of fruit for winter use. Get the fruit wherever you can. Obtain it most cheaply. Notice she said, in many cases of sickness, we already saw, the best thing to do is fast and then go on a what? Fruit diet. But we are in general afraid of these things because there's sugar in it. But God didn't say, Adam and Eve, hey guys, be careful in there. Be careful in that garden. Those fruit are dangerous on those trees. No, they were the food God gave in perfection, right? Now, by the way, I'm not saying don't eat vegetables. That's not at all what I'm saying here. But what I'm trying to do is exonerate fruit. That's the point, that it isn't a deadly food. It is actually one of the greatest healing foods that God has given to us. Yes, we eat grains. Yes, we eat veggies. And we eat sparingly of things like nuts or heavy foods like that. But then what are we told? We are told that where there is no vision, the people perish. But he that keeps the law, what? Happy is he. I say these things just simply because I lived this life. The high-fat vegan life. The high-spice vegan life. And I loved the life until my body began to break down. I had, emotional problems, depression, anxiety, gallbladder issues, achy joints, migraines. As a vegan, my life looked like a nightmare. And then I began to follow what Ellen White said. The migraines went away. My high blood pressure issues went away. My cholesterol went from high to 100, total cholesterol of 113. Everything began to change. My energy levels went through the roof. My gallbladder pain went away. My depression went away. My anxiety went away. I mean, I can get it back by eating those same foods again. I know how to get it. If I want to be depressed, I could be depressed in 2 weeks if I wanted to. Know exactly how to do it. I found out how I can be depressed and how I can be happy. And I've been able to live happy by God's grace because what does it say? He that keeps God's law. And I don't just mean the Ten Commandments, but whatever God says, when we keep it, happy will we be. That's what he says. Because the thief cometh not for to kill, but to steal and to kill and to destroy. But Jesus said, I am come that they might have what? Life, and life more abundantly. I say these things not to you to put anybody down. I know there are people in the church who teach, that these statements don't really make sense and they were wrong. And actually, somebody was asked, they were saying, but Ellen White says this. And the response came back, Ellen White was not a nutritionist. And Jesus wasn't a theologian either. So do we throw out what he said? And guess what? The message we've been given is called the testimony of Jesus. Right? I have a challenge to everyone. Not to believe a word I said today. Not a word I said. My challenge to you is this. I challenge each person here to go back to those books we've been given. The Bible is the standard. Seventh-day Adventists, we get our doctrinal beliefs from the Bible. We get many beneficial beliefs about health from the blessed writings of Spirit of Prophecy, right? And I would challenge you to pick up the books and not try to interpret them in the light of common teachings within the church, within traditions of Seventh-day Adventists. I believe that I had become like the Jews of old, where I had all these traditions figuring that that's what the Bible said, and then Jesus came and showed, no. What you think is the truth is a tradition, actually. But go back to the what? The Word of God. I used to keep Sunday, and I thought the Sabbath was Sunday. It was a tradition. Not until somebody actually showed me, right? No. The Bible actually says something different. And so I challenge you not to believe a word I said today, but to actually, and not to go to a scientist, because yes, it is true, there are benefits to all of these things we just talked about. Coffee, great, could help you live longer. You know, you might dilate the arteries with the cayenne pepper. You might, get tons of antioxidants from all kinds of peppers, right? Black pepper, by the way, research shows actually cause microbe bleeding within the stomach. Research has shown this. How did she know not to eat this? I could go on for hours after hour on this, and she always ends up being right. So my challenge to you is begin to pick up the books again and read them with new eyes. And don't try to rationalize, well, we do this because, well, somebody told us to, but just say, what would happen? What would happen if we actually just tried what she said? You will be the happiest campus on planet Earth. I actually believe that. Because God gave these things in part for our happiness. I want to give you two other challenges and I'm closing. I went way too long. We are supposed to feed the guests, we are told, Ellen White tells us, in Counsels and Dying Foods, feed them a little bit richer than you or I might eat. What do we normally do? We eat richer than the guests. The guests have to go on a diet that is not so rich, and we get to eat the rich diet, right? So I'm going to challenge you at some point to actually try what she said and eat a whole food, plant-based diet with nothing refined for 1 month at some point. You don't have to do this. If you don't do this, I'll love you. I'm not here being judgmental, not even at all, not even a little bit. I love you. But I would challenge you, see what happens. See if you begin to find some of the benefits that my wife and I have found. See if some of the health issues that you've had for years as a vegan maybe actually start fading away as you get toward the diet that the maker prescribed. So I'm going to challenge you to do that. Try for the workers specifically, sometime to try to go a month like that. And even if you eat at home, try to see what happens. One of the schools that I know of tried this, and one of the students told me the spirituality of our school changed. So I'm not telling you what you have to do, but that's my challenge today, to try that as a campus, maybe going on a whole food diet for 1 month and a no-spice diet for 1 month and see what happens to your physical life, to your emotional life, to depression, anger, lust issues. You may see, we are told, this is the last quote, overcome the desire to gratify appetite. And if you do this, your passions will be easily controlled. What if this was a campus where it was easy to control your passions? And I'm not saying it's not now, but what if your own life, it was easy not to look at dirty things on the internet, not to get angry with somebody, not to get frustrated, not to have anxiety and these kind of things? What if it was easy? That is my hope.